Welcome to Coastal Cafe. I'm Aaron Barnett, your host today. Coastal Cafe is a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the University of Washington College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM. And today we're starting off a series which has a national scope. We're going to be talking to folks from the National Center for Environmental Information, which is the nation's leading authority for environmental data and manages one of the largest archives of atmospheric, coastal, geophysical, and oceanographic research in the world. The NCEI contributes to the NESDIS mission by developing new products and services that span the science disciplines and enable better data discovery. And today we have a very special guest who's going to be talking about how microplastics fit into the National Center's environmental database. We have Dr. Ebenezer Nyadro, who is the Associate Research Professor for the Mississippi State University and NOAA's National Center for Environmental Information, the Stennis Space Center in Mississippi. Ebenezer is a physical and satellite oceanographer. Eben graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Oceanography and Fisheries from the University of Ghana and Master of Science in Marine Science from the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, and a PhD in Physical and Satellite Oceanography from the University of South Carolina. He previously worked at NOAA Pacific Marine Environmental Lab in Seattle and the U.S. Naval Research Lab at Stennis Space Center, Mississippi. Eben's research focuses on microplastics, ocean current, salinity, air-sea interactions, and ocean environmental leadership and capacity building. And welcome to the show, Eben.
Thank you very much, Aaron. Thanks for having us from NCEI.
You're welcome. So could you give us a brief overview of what NCEI does in addition to the brief statement I just read?
Yeah, NCEI is the National Center for Environmental Information, and it's a branch of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, that is NOAA. And what NCEI starts to do is to be the nation's environmental steward. So basically, we get an archive data from every part of the globe, every aspect of the environment, from the top or surface of the sun to the bottommost part of the ocean. We do it all. So we are archivists of over tons of several tons and terabytes of data, where we collect these, we process them, take them through quality control, make sure that the data we get are of good quality, and then we archive them and preserve them for the nation. And we make this available to the general public, to policy makers, to students, to researchers, journalists, and alike. Because we have a broad spectrum of people that we cater to, we try to also develop value-added products, which makes it easier for people to just go grab the needed information they're looking for and be able to interpret it. That way, we make it said that it's user-friendly. So that people who do not have the capabilities of using advanced software to process data can easily grab some of the value-added product that we produce to make whatever decisions they want to make or for education purposes. So essentially, we are what we call the nation's archives, where we store environmental information.
So who, what disciplines or individuals or professions can use the database?
Very, very broad, very broad. So we have people in the private sector. So you could have like engineers who are developing a product, or let's say people in real estate who want to put up a building by the coast. They want to know what the wave structure is going to be like. They want to know what the hurricane situation like is going to be like. They want to understand earthquakes in that region. We have people from the insurance industry who may want to use that to their own advise their clients. People in the health sector, for example, also go to grab our data. We have people in environmental science and policy who also use our data. We have people in different aspects of environment. Every day we get emails from various spheres of life. People who contact us for data, one data or the other, wanting to understand something that happened in the environment, say 50 years ago. You know, so when we talk about data, we collect what we call paleo data, which is things that happened several years ago. So very, very recent data, for example, data that came out just a minute ago from satellite. So we do it all different spectra, different time frame, and cater to users from different backgrounds.
Hmm. And so now you manage the microplastics data.
Yes, I do.
And apparently it's a pretty new data set. Could you explain to us actually, why don't we just start off with microplastics? What are microplastics?
Yeah. So microplastics are plastics that are 5 millimeters or less. So they are very tiny. Now, they originate primarily as such, as microplastics, or they break down from macroplastics, which are plastics that are bigger than 5 millimeters. So for example, the bottled waters that we drink from, the groceries bag that we get from the stores when we go there, the plastics that our food is put in when we go to some, let's say a Chinese restaurant and all. When we don't dispose them well, they get into the environment, and as they transcend from wherever they are to different places through the actions of winds, water, and other perils of the environment, they degrade and they break down into tiny bits into what we call microplastics. Why are we concerned about this? We've seen that the rate at which they are being produced is very astronomical. Currently, some studies have shown that the rate at which we are producing microplastics exceed carbon. So we're going to get more headaches on our hands than carbon probably is doing to us if we don't cater to this microplastic phenomenon very well. And part of the reason why we are concerned is that it's very damaging, not just to the environment, but to different aspects of our life. If microplastics get into the water bodies, they are in the water surface. So they affect the fishes that are there, or they affect their babies. So you have like fingerlings, that's the baby fishes, of shrimps, nauplii, and stuff like that. They ingest it into their bodies. If those baby organisms don't die and they grow, they get eaten by bigger organisms, like bigger fishes. And if they survive, sometimes they will die because the microplastics can clog into their veins, their bloodstreams, and cause them to die. But if they survive all this, and humans go out there to fish them out, we eat and it gets into our bodies. This is what biologists call bioaccumulation, because it affects a little organism and it moves down the chain, that's the food chain or food web, to the higher organisms, which are humans. And recently, some scientists in Europe, in Italy to be specific, and they studied human placenta and human fetus, pregnant women, and they found microplastics in the babies, in their unborn babies. So this is very, very alarming, and the need for us to tackle this problem. Again, to our environment, we go to the beaches, you see plastics lying all over. So you're reducing the aesthetic value of the beaches. Beaches are a great economy to some of our states. And if you have debts on your beaches, nobody is going to come there. It's going to affect the local economy. It's going to affect the local fisheries. And it cascades down to individuals in their homes. Families are going to suffer. So this is the reason why this has become very dire. We need to understand where these microplastics are coming from, the pathways that they travel to be able to get into the different components of the environment, and how they end up. And microplastics take very long time to get away, and they may not even get away. So they could settle to the bottom of the water bodies, into the sediment. And when you have a storm, like down here in Mississippi, when we have hurricanes, the water gets stirred up, and those plastics or microplastics that are stuck in the sediment get resuspended and come back to the water surface and cause more damages. So there's the dire need for us to understand these microplastics so that we can better be informed and tackle them. But how are we going to do this? We need data. And where is the data? It's unavailable. And this is where NCEI comes in. As I mentioned earlier, we are the nation's archivists and stewards of environmental data. So leadership saw it as a need to add microplastics to the data sets that we have. So this project started January of last year, that's 2020, and I was tasked to lead this effort. And together with a couple of my colleagues, we've worked very hard with very, very, very good support from leadership. We've been able to scale this up, and just this July of 2021, we launched it. And what we are doing is to create a global database of microplastics, because you need to understand where the plastics are coming from, which countries are producing more plastics. And with our background in oceanography and our understanding of how water moves, we're able to understand the dynamics of plastics. For example, if I were to drop a plastic into the sounds just next to my home here in Mississippi, we will be able to use numerical models to track and say it may end up in New York in, say, a month's time. It may end up in Europe, say, 6 months' time. If we're able to do this and understand, and we can meet at the national levels, governments to governments can meet and say, hey, you guys are producing more plastics. This is the evidence. Then when we do that, we will be better to tackle problem. If we need to let polluters pay, we'll have the strength to do that. But bottom line is, we want to understand this phenomenon and how it's going on. And that is why we are collating data from across the globe and aggregate it at a unified place where scientists, journalists, policymakers, everybody can come to grab this data and be able to understand and study this phenomenon. So primarily, that is what this microplastic project is all about.
Fascinating. So what are the main sources of data collection? Where do you get your data from?
So far, we've had global efforts, which one, for example, is from Volvo Race at Sea. And this is a group of people who love to take their boats out and enjoy some boat racing. So folks talked about, why don't we put some instrument on board your boat while you're racing? It's collecting water samples from which we can also study microplastics. So that was one of the source of data that we got. Another source we got was from the Adventure Scientist Group, which is like citizen science. And this is one way we see going in the future as a source of microplastic data. So people were trained and given 1 liter bottles. They go out to, let's say you're going on vacation, you go in kayaking, you come across some river bodies and all. They are taught to take some readings, fetch water, and then send it to a lab where the analysis is done. And this data was fed to a leading scientist who collated all this, and they were kind enough to give it to us. Another place we've gotten data is from the Sea Education Association based off in Massachusetts. And what these guys do is they take students out to sea for, say, a month or so, and students get credits and they study the ocean. So as part of their activities, they collected data. So these are broad areas that we've collected data. But microplastic study is still elementary, so we don't have extensive data as we would like. So we're also going after what we call local data sources. And basically, it's people going out to study a river or a stream in their town or their neighborhood, or people who go out to beaches to just collect or clean up beaches. So these are localized efforts, and those are what we're currently pursuing. And we're going after these data sets so we can increase the volume of data that we have. So we'll have a very extensive database which will meet the needs of the various people that we serve here at NCEI.
So if somebody in Washington State here wanted to contribute to your database, how would they go about doing that?
So if you go into NCEI webpage, we have the microplastic product, and the website for that is www.ncei.noaa.gov. And in there, you just scroll down, you see there'll be a tab that will say send to NCEI. So we have a tab there where you can click, and then you send your data set to NCEI and we'll do the rest. It's very easy as that. Or you can go to the microplastic page. So while you are at the NCEI.noaa.gov page, you can just type in microplastics. It will bring you to our product page, and we have a step there where you can send us email with your data, or there's a tab you can click and upload the data there, and we'll take it out from there and do the rest of the work.
Oh, great. And if you're just joining us, this is KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and I'm Aaron Barnett, today's host of Coastal Cafe, and we're speaking with Evan Nyadro from the National Center for Environmental Information at the Stennis Spaceport in Mississippi, of all places. So I wanted to follow up with your last statement about where to contact. If somebody loses that information, they also can contact me at the University of Washington, and my email is aaronb5@uw.edu. Now, where when somebody goes to your website and wants information, what are they going to find? How do you have it presented?
Yes. So if you go to the NCEI.noaa.gov products/microplastics that will send you directly to our webpage. And in there, we have a little information about what microplastics are, the consequences they have on our environment and organisms in our environment, as well as we humans. We try to educate the public on these, and we try to tell them the need for this data. In there also, you see a tab which you say submit data, where you'll be sending your data to us. But also more importantly, there'll be a tab there which will lead you to launch a microplastic map. So this is the global map that we're creating here at NCEI. And in that map, you will see the data sets that we currently have received, that we've taken through rigorous quality control checks, and we've put them out there. So you can see the distribution of microplastics across the globe. You can also subset to see at particular locations or particular data sets. And we have bubbles of each of these data that when you click on each one of them, it will tell you the location that that data is, that's the latitude and longitude. It will tell you the time that that data was collected. And more importantly also, you can download the data set as well in Excel format and all that format that you can use for your own research or your own education. So we're looking, going forward, we're looking to add more value added product to this, where users can just go in and they could see, say, time series maps, which will show the distribution of microplastics at a particular location over time, plus other information that will be useful to the general public as well.
So since you've created this database and you've been immersed in it for a while, what is some of the most interesting things that you've pulled out of it that you'd like to share that are of interest or unique or something that you think our listeners might find funny even?
Yeah. So for now, we're still developing the database. As I mentioned, it's quite new. So it would be interesting to see that most of the data that we have, you see a high density of data near the coastal regions, which is quite worrying because our beaches are, as mentioned, they are of economic value to us. The pristine beaches also protect the environment. We have marshes on the beaches which act as safeguards for us because they trap energy from the ocean so that it doesn't get to us and destroy our homes and other activities. So that is one thing that we're going to find to be interesting, that we have aggregation of microplastics near our beach coastlines. And that is also quite worrying because this is where life starts. A lot of life for organisms that are on ocean starts from the coastal region. So you have crabs and turtles and all that come to the beaches to lay their eggs. And then when they hatch, then they go back to the ocean. So if we have large volumes of microplastics on the beaches and these organisms come there to nest, then they are high risk of dying very early or not even make it to adulthood. That means that if we don't tackle this microplastic problem early, we're going to have decline in certain organisms that are a peril of microplastics. So these are some of the interesting things that you find on the database that we currently have.
Are there any species that are more at risk for microplastics in the coastal zone than others?
Yes, there are. So turtles are, for example, are very big risks because when microplastics are floating in the ocean, it becomes deceptive to them. They think it is food and then they eat it and then it kills them. So they are found a lot on the coastline because they come to the coast also to nest. They lay their eggs in there and then go back. So they are more prone to getting affected by microplastics. Other organisms are also like crabs because you have some that come to the coast or live in the marshes, in the estuaries and the marshy regions. And they also are very high risk of getting this. And some of these organisms filter the water. So the marshes also will filter the water. So if you have microplastics in them, that could restrict some of these activities. So these organisms will stand greater risks of being affected by microplastics than those that are in the open ocean, for example.
Hmm. Have you seen any population reductions that can be linked to an increase in microplastics?
At present, we don't have the data to make that strong conclusion. And that is part of the reason why we're collecting data sets, so that we can be able to make informed decisions and be able to categorically say that this is leading to a decline in this organism. Nevertheless, we've seen instances where we study, I have colleagues who are studying turtle stranding on our beaches. So they, whenever turtles die on our beaches, they take them, to the lab, try to diagnose what killed them. And over again, increasingly, they are finding microplastics in these organisms. So we're hoping that the database that we created will attract more data in these instances. Then we'll have the data set to categorically make these statements. But there's evidence that this is going on.
Yeah, of course, the question that leads from a lot of this is, how do you keep this from happening? You know, what can be done to reduce the amount of microplastics released in the environment or plastic that degrades down into that form?
So it all goes back to the source. So that is part of the reason why we're looking at the trajectory of plastics. So scientists now, when they're doing studies, they're not just looking at plastics where they found them, but they're also trying to trace it back to where they came from. So if you live in a coastal region, for example, you have a couple of streams, bayous, lakes, and all. So you try to do what we call trajectory tracking or trajectory study. And you could do this with numerical models. For example, if you understand the pattern of river flow and all, you can tell that if I drop a bottle in this location, it's going to end up here in this other location. So that is some of the things that we need this data to support. But indeed, yeah, these are going on and we need to further study it to better understand it.
Do you know how long it takes for a plastic water bottle to break down into a microplastic form?
Off my head, I don't have the number, but it is several years because you need ultraviolet radiation, one, to do it. And it also depends on the environment that it is in. If you are in an environment where the water flow is very rigorous versus, let's say, a lake. If you're in a lake, for example, it could float in it and stay for a long time. But if you're in a riverine system, it could move it around. And as it's moving around, it's knocking stones here and there and all that. And if depending on the weather, if you're south here, for example, where it's very hot, it will degrade faster than if you're in cooler regions. So it's difficult to put a number on it because it depends on the environment. And one thing that it's good you brought this up, that is making this microplastic study even more interesting, is the fact that studies are showing that it could be linked to, we could have consequences of increased microplastics from melting of ice, because you have microplastics that have been carried out from water into the cold regions. They get buried into the ice and they're frozen. So if you have global warming and these ice are melting, as well as releasing waters, they are releasing microplastics as well, which will increase the volume of microplastics that we have.
Kind of a wicked problem.
Yeah, so a summary of the answer to your question is, if we want to stop microplastic, we just have to stop the source, which is the bottles, the plastic materials that we dumping into water bodies have to stop. That is the surest way to reduce microplastic production.
Now, a lot of manufacturers and a lot of people are making and people are buying biodegradable plastic, which are made from food stock. Can you comment on that type of plastic, which technically is considered a plastic, even though it's technically biodegradable? Do you have any comments about that type of material?
Yes, I think if they can biodegrade, it will not totally eliminate the problem, but it will help greatly to minimize it. So those are good policies to follow. Yeah, I do understand, and many of my colleagues also do understand, that we cannot entirely erode the plastics in our life. Some ways, some of the certain things that we cannot change them to use other material other than plastics. So they will be here. But the key is properly disposing them off. Mm-hmm. That is where the question is. Yes. So as much as we can reduce them and also cut down, we should also reduce how they produce. And when I lived in Seattle, I realized that when we went to the grocery stores, there are stores that if you want to use plastic bags, you got to pay. And they encourage use of paper bags instead. So this is something that other states and other counties can take on to help us reduce the influx of plastics into our environment.
Yeah, a lot of municipalities are banning those plastic shopping bags. Yeah. And apparently it's not only because of the microplastic and the breakdown issue, apparently they clog up storm drains.
Yeah.
Which can cost a lot of money to clean out, in big events. Is there anything you'd like to share or add on top of what we've discussed in the last half hour?
Yeah, I'll say thank you so much for you and your organization for letting us tell our story. And we think that the NCEI microplastic database is going to grow astronomically, especially with the help of the general public and everybody who is concerned about plastic, which I think everybody should, because it affects everyone. So we're looking forward to a time where we'll have a plastic-free world. And more importantly, when we could also collect this data to be able to help us make informed decisions. So I'll say thank you for the opportunity. And then just to the general public, let's try and dispose of our plastics correctly. If we cannot do away with plastics entirely, let's try to minimize the way we release them into the environment so that they don't end up in our drinks. And I should also say, with the COVID pandemic going on and with the face masks we're using, that's something also that we've seen to be a source of microplastics into the environment. So let's also be cautious of those as well and dispose them off correctly so we don't increase the volume of microplastics in our environments. Thank you.
So one more follow-up question. Where would one dispose of those N95 COVID masks?
Yeah, I think we need to put them in, put them correctly into bags, and then there should be places where we can go dispose them off. Here in Mississippi, for example, this county has set up dates where we can come to a particular location and bring these things, and they will properly dispose them off. So let's gather them, not just put them into our regular trash, but put them in a special bagged containers and then take them to places where cities have designated them to be, and they are a better place to handle them.
Thank you all for joining us. This is Aaron Barnett, and you've been listening to Coastal Cafe, the joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the University of Washington College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM. Washington Sea Grant is a program of the National Oceanographic Atmospheric Administration and helps people and marine life thrive by providing research, technical expertise, and education that support the conservation of our ocean and coastlines. I'd like to thank our program director, Larry Stein, and production engineer, Jared Dufresne. And as always, a special shout out to the band Kuik for sharing their music with us at the open and closing of this program. Thank you for listening and have a great day. Hatuasiku, ha, hingin ani. Hatuasiku, ha.